Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
All right, welcome into this Monday afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports here on AM 870 105.1 FM. It is once again Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Al should be back in for tomorrow's Tuesday edition of Current Sports, recapping the Stanley Cup Final that'll take place tonight. I'm sure Al will spend a lot of time breaking that down. That's a joke. He's not a big hockey guy. But I am, so we'll break down that game tonight for you to lead off the show, as well as, you know, kind of recapping what was in Game 2 of last night's NBA Finals. From the 6, Toronto, as the Golden State Warriors evened up their series against the Raptors at one game apiece. But before we get into that, let me introduce the man to my right, Connor Mathis. He's behind the glass. Connor, how was your weekend, my man?
It was pretty good, pretty low key. Had a friend of a friend to come back up here and visit, so just kind of hung out.
A friend of a friend?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. From Virginia, I presume.
No. This is my roommate's friend from okay. Ionia. So
gotcha. Is the roommate still up here? Or is he home for the summer?
He's still here. We're both up here until the lease goes up. So
okay, gotcha. Well, good for you guys. I'm glad that was good. My weekend was pretty busy, but was really excited to hop back on the mic, obviously, and break down some hockey, break down some basketball, and just love talking sports, man. And, you know, we get into these summer months, and, you know, just a couple weeks from now, it's going to all slow down as the NBA offseason, NHL offseason kind of kicks in. And, you know, we're just left with baseball, and there's 1,000 games in a baseball season, and, you know, it's just hard to keep track of all that. So, you know what, Connor? I love these summer months. But I'm really cherishing these last few months, or these last few games, I should say, this last week and a half, if you will, really, of, you know, the NHL and the NBA before we get into the off season. Because the one downside of summer to me is just that, you know, there's no sports outside of baseball, right? And then fall comes back and we got football season coming back and, you know, basketball and hockey kick back up shortly thereafter. And speaking of football, we will touch on a topic from over the weekend regarding future Hall of Fame and former Lions superstar Calvin Johnson, you know, in the top two all time when it comes to the greatest Detroit Lions, greatest players to ever don the Honolulu Blue, in my opinion, right there with Barry Sanders. And, you know, they both kind of left the team in the midst of their, you know, their prime, or when they had more left in the tank, just because they couldn't do it anymore, putting up with this horrible franchise that us Detroiters are subjected to rooting for. There was a story from over the weekend regarding Calvin Johnson and his relationship with the Lions and what it'll take for him to mend his relationship with the Lions following their fallout after his retirement after the 2015 season. So we'll touch on that. Connor and I will give you our thoughts on that as well, and we'll invite you to join the show as well. As always, the phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. And you can also tweet the show at WKAR News. Once again, the Facebook live stream is down for today. We will have it back up tomorrow when Al's back in. But for today, just call in 517-355-9527 or tweet the show at WKAR News. You know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
Okay.
All right, and we kick it off with the aforementioned NBA Finals. Golden State bounced back and even the series yesterday night with a 109-104 victory in Game 2. The Splash Brothers went for a combined 48 points, 9 assists, and 8 boards. Meanwhile, Kawhi Leonard finished with a double-double. That is 34 points and 14 boards for the Toronto Raptors. Game 3 will tip off Wednesday night at 9 p.m. So I guess another traveling day, another extra day off in the NBA Finals. How do you feel about those? Do you like the staggered schedule?
I really, really like staggered schedule. It's much better off for the performance, I think. You know, you have, especially with basketball, where it's constantly running, constant motion for, you know, the 4 quarters or however much. And plus you have your superstars usually playing 3.5 to 4 of those quarters.
Right.
So I think it's important to give them a day or two off to travel, kind of get acclimated to like time changes and things like that too.
You do think there's a discernible difference in the product on the floor when they have an extra day
off? I think so. You kind of see it in like NBA regular season. If a team has like 2 or 3 games in a row, then it kind of drops off. If there's a little bit more of a day off or 2 days off even, it tends to be a better product. Especially if the teams are getting tired and you're heavily reliant on superstars.
Analytics with Connor Mathis. Not a big NBA guy in the regular season. So that's an interesting perspective. And you know what? That does make a lot of sense. So sticking with this NBA theme, Stephen Curry last night called the Raptors defense disrespectful to close out the game. Toronto was heavily trapping Curry as the clock wound down, leaving Andre Iguodala, that is former NBA Finals MVP Andre Iguodala, as a wide open man beyond the 3-point line. He found himself plenty of time to set up and shoot the game ceiling 3. Connor, I don't think there was anyone in the same zip code as Andre Iguodala when he took the shot. After the game, Warriors point guard Steph Curry called out the Raptors' fourth quarter defense, specifically their efforts on Golden State's final possession.
Up down the stretch, they made a big run, and late Andre Iguodala, with several seconds remaining, takes that shot. Describe the confidence you had or what you thought when he released it.
The whole fourth quarter, they're playing some janky defense, just trying to send bodies to me everywhere, and our whole roster just took advantage of it. Like, over the course of the game, that's kind of disrespectful to leave Andre Iguodala open like that. You know, with the game on the line, he's made big shots like that before, and he got it done tonight.
And Connor, you just rang in my ear that you have some thoughts on this, on the interview or on the play itself?
On Steph Curry's comments. I mean, come on. It's if there is anybody who you don't want taking the shot, it's Steph Curry. I completely understand teams being like, okay, one of your role players is going to have to step up, especially since Andre Iguodala was shooting like hot garbage that game, and his three-point percentage is 33%. I mean, if he's one of the guys I'm more comfortable with saying, hey, you know, if he's going to make it, okay, he makes it. 9 times out of 10, is he really going to drill that shot? No. So I think it was a smarter play by the Raptors. Now, granted, after the first, like, 2 seconds of no one going there, someone should have at least tried to close up.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, come on. I would much rather leave Andre Iguodala wide open than a Draymond Green, a Steph Curry, Quinn Cook, who was balling at that point. Like, come on. Disrespectful? Come on now.
Well, I mean, he's got to be a good teammate, and he's got to stick up for his guy, though, doesn't he?
He does, but he could have said, like, oh, no, it's a really good shot by Andre Iguodala, but disrespectful defense? Come on. They're trying to win. You play to win the game.
How many NBA Finals MVPs does Andre Iguodala have?
One.
And how many does Steph Curry? How many does Steph Curry have?
Goose eggs.
All right, I rest my case.
Yeah,
all right. I'm just messing with you. All right, sticking with this NBA theme, you know, as the game went on last night, part of me was rooting for Toronto to win Game 2, just because I want to be entertained. I'm not a big NBA guy, and I've seen the Warriors win 3 out of the last 4 NBA Finals. They're going for their 4th in 5 years, but then I look over on the bench and I just see Drake being a moron, and I just can't put up with it any longer. And every time it just reminds me how much I love Draymond Green and how much I want Draymond Green to win his 4th NBA title in 5 years. And the trash talking between the Golden State Warriors and Raptors ambassador / Drake ambassador, because let's be real, as I mentioned on Friday's edition of Current Sports, Drake might be a Raptors fan, but first and foremost, he is there for self-promotion. He is there for Drake. So anyway, the trash talking escalated Sunday night as Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson were both chirping at the Raptor in the tunnel following the game. making sure Drake knew the series was tied up after the Warriors' 109-104 win. KRON 4 reporter, KRON 4 reporter Jason Dumas caught the exchange. "We'll see you in the Bay, Aubrey," Thompson said, referring to Drake's real name, Aubrey Graham. "You weren't talking tonight, were you? Bum ass." And Durant added, "It's all right. It's okay. Keep your head up." Game 3, as we mentioned, will take place on Wednesday night from Oracle Arena in Oakland. Connor, are you starting to see where I'm coming from, that I just find Drake completely insufferable?
I do not. I still think it's fun. The antics, I love that we're having we're having superstars trash-talking fans courtside. I love it. I love it. Bringing it back to Spike Lee talking smack to Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller, giving him a few certain gestures when the Knicks couldn't pull it off. I am here for this. Here for this beef. It's making this much better.
Have we heard any word on whether or not Drake will be in Oracle Arena for Game 3?
Oh, come on, he's probably gonna be there. He's got money to burn.
He's
got plenty of money to burn. He'll be there.
It's not going to be in his town, though, so I hope security takes care of him if he's being too annoying.
No, they won't. They won't.
Let a man dream.
No, they won't do that.
Let a man
Jack,
dream. Or maybe a stray rebound comes free and bounces off of
See, that's
head.
More realistic, Jack. Now you're thinking more realistically.
Oh, my goodness. I just can't put up with Drake in these NBA finals. This is incredibly annoying to me. All right, shifting gears finally away from the NBA. I'm not a big boxing fan, but this was all over Twitter Saturday night. Andy Ruiz Jr. sprung one of the biggest shocks in heavyweight championship history Saturday night, like I mentioned, when he spoiled Anthony Joshua's U.S. debut with a 7-round TKO at Madison Square Garden. The unheralded 29-year-old from Southern California, a replacement opponent dialed in on 5 weeks' notice, who went off as an 11-1 underdog, came off the floor in the third round to drop Joshua twice before the end of the frame, then sent the undefeated champion crashing to the canvas for a third and fourth time in the seventh round before referee Mike Griffin put a stop to the proceedings at the 127 mark of the seventh round. Working on Press Pass last night, shameless plug here with Jack Ebling, the other show that I interned for, the TV show that I interned for. Jack described it as a real-life Rocky situation here. Connor, obviously, Andy Ruiz coming out of nowhere, replacement opponent, and winds up winning the fight. This was hilarious to me.
I mean, it was crazy, but I think it's making that division of boxing, making it much more interesting now. I mean, you have Wilder, who's already just absolutely insane. I mean, and then Joshua was another one of their big three. So to see him go down was entertaining as anything.
Was Anthony Joshua wasn't undefeated, was he?
I'm not sure about that. I have to double check. I don't follow boxing too much.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
I knew he was part of the new big three in their division.
He hasn't fought Deontay Wilder, has he?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll have to check up on that. But Andy Ruiz Jr. once again, stunning the world and defeating Anthony Joshua as a heavy, heavy underdog. Stanley Cup Finals continue tonight. Game 4. The Bruins are coming off of a 7-2 victory over the St. Louis Blues and look to take a commanding 3-1 lead on the road with a win tonight. I'll have more thoughts for you on that later in the hour, but obviously I'm not pulling for Boston just because I'm tired of the Boston fan base, if you will, getting everything that they want as a Detroit sports fan, understanding that I am nowhere near seeing another title in my town and I haven't seen one in over a decade. I am so tired of the Boston sports fans in New England as a whole just getting everything they want with, you know, the Red Sox winning back in October, followed up by a Patriots Super Bowl in February, and the Bruins are now 2 games away from winning a Stanley Cup. I believe that'll be their 12th championship in the last 18 years. To me, that's just ridiculous. I'm not a fan of Boston. I'm tired of them. But I'm not completely... Let's put it this way. I think the Blues are going to win tonight, and I still think this is going to be a long series. And Jordan Binnington coming off of a loss has been lights out in the playoffs this year. So I'm not counting the Blues out yet, despite how awful they looked in Game 3 at home, their first Stanley Cup final game in St. Louis in almost 50 years. Very disappointing showing, obviously. But I think they'll win tonight. I think they'll bounce back. And, you know, I'm not sleeping on the Blues just yet. I've seen them come back from, you know, equally or almost as adverse situation in the Western Conference Finals. So we'll see what happens. And then another topic we'll touch on later on in the hour. Calvin Johnson says he'll make peace with the Lions if his bonus is returned. team president Rod Wood wants Calvin Johnson back in the Detroit Lions family, and the greatest wide receiver in the history of the organization is open to that idea under just one condition. They already know what they got to do, Johnson told the Free Press, Detroit Free Press, that is, at the annual camp he runs for local high school students Saturday in Metro Detroit. The only way they're going to get me back is if they put that money back in my pocket. Nah, you don't do that. I don't care what they say. They can put it back, then they can have me back. That's the bottom line. Wood said at the team's Taste of the Lions event he hoped to have a Barry Sanders-like relationship with Johnson and hoped to bring Johnson back into the fold before he's eligible to go into the Hall of Fame in 2021. Sanders, like Johnson, was forced to repay a seven-figure portion of his signing bonus when he retired abruptly before the 1999 season. Connor and I will have more thoughts for you on that story later on in the hour. But for now, shifting gears, staying with Detroit sports, shifting over to the Tigers. They still stink. They lost again, this time to the Atlanta Braves, 7-4. Their record is approximately 6-850 now, I believe it is, as the season wears on. Their next game will be tomorrow night. They mercifully have an off day tonight. They'll take on the Tampa Bay Rays tomorrow night at 7:10 p.m. And then to close out the headliners, Roger Goodell, who is in Western New York at Jim Kelly's charity golf tournament, suggests the Bills need a new stadium to stay, quote, competitive. Goodell, who said at the tournament 3 years ago that the team needs a new stadium to stay in Buffalo on a successful basis, end quote, said today that other stadiums around the league should be a signal to the Bills. And I quote, a stadium is going to maintain the kind of fan base that's going to keep the team competitive and allow us to be successful in that market, Goodell said. And that's exactly why we're focusing on it here in this market as well as we have in every other market. The one point I'll make to this is the Detroit Red Wings played in Joe Louis Arena for the longest time, which is one of the worst facilities. I mean, it's the worst sports facility I've ever been in when it comes to amenities and fan experience, other than the sight lines, which were, depending on where you sat, they were actually pretty good, obviously much better at Little Caesars Arena. But that place was, I'll just call it like it is, and Detroit fans may not like me for saying this, Joe Louis Arena was the dump. And yet the Red Wings maintained themselves in a competitive manner in every way imaginable throughout the 90s and early aughts, winning four Stanley Cups and never failing to fill their stadium. So I guess the one comment I'll have on that is winning fixes everything. Doesn't matter what your stadium looks like. I just think the Buffalo Bills, if they improve their product on the field, Connor, they will see massive increase in terms of being successful as a business.
I saw the article as more of kind of like a shot across the bow saying, look, if you don't get it, if you don't get that new stadium, we're not gonna, the next NFL relocation, if you guys say to relocate, we're not gonna be there to step in and defend you guys again. Because that's what happened last time when their old owner died. They had a group of investors that wanted to move them to Toronto, and there's a big push to get the Bills in Toronto from that side. But they promised they're going to get a new stadium, they're going to get some upgrades. But I think this was a kind of a warning shot by the NFL saying, look, we're not going to protect you if this relocation talk comes again.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually, because that would make sense, obviously, moving the team to Toronto. So I personally would hope that wouldn't happen, but guess we'll see what comes of it. That does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please feel free. Again, the phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Also, once again, the Facebook live stream is down for today, but you can tweet the show at WKAR News, I should say. No underscore there. So it's just at WKAR News. Connor, let's do it. We went with the instrumental version here, Connor. I kind of would have liked to hear the voice, but Can't complain too much. Uh-oh, you're busy. You're talking to someone behind the glass. Don't worry about it. Never mind. Good choice, though, on the instrumental here. A nice change of pace. Throwing a little change up for us tonight. I want to lead the show off by kind of what I touched on in the current Sports Quick Hit headliners, and that is the Stanley Cup playoffs, Stanley Cup final, Game 4 tonight from St. Louis. And I think the Blues are going to pull this one out. I know how poor they looked in Game 3, and Jordan Binnington obviously needs to be better than he was in that game, as he has been these entire playoffs. I mean, he's been probably the key force driving the Blues all the way to the Stanley Cup final, as has his opposing goalie Tuukka Rask for the Boston Bruins. I mean, they've really been the main storylines, I would argue, for both teams, just because, you know, when you look at what the Boston Bruins have done these playoffs, Patrice Bergeron is, I don't think, healthy. Not completely. I mean, his ice time is not where it usually is, and Patrice Bergeron is a psychopath who has played through some unbelievable injuries in recent years. You know, going back to, what was it, the 2013 Stanley Cup final against the Blackhawks, he was playing with, I believe it was a separated shoulder and a broken rib. That's just kind of what guys do in the NHL as the playoffs wear on, and, you know, there's something up with Bergeron because he hasn't been productive throughout these playoffs, or as productive as he typically is, and his ice time is down a little bit. So, you know, despite that, they've found their way here. They're just two games away from winning the Stanley Cup final. And, well, I guess I shouldn't say his production isn't where it needs to be. I mean, he's almost at a point per game in these playoffs. But, you know, nevertheless, I don't think he's 100%. I think there's something else going on there. But shifting gears back to Jordan Binnington, the goaltender for the St. Louis Blues, he's really been the breakout story of these playoffs. He had played in about 30 games this season as a 25-year-old rookie. Just kind of goes to show the life of an NHL goaltender. He was drafted in 2011. This is his first year. He's played more than just one game in the NHL. Speaks to the development that guys have to go through as they make their way into the NHL, especially at the goaltender position. And he's really been the driving force for the St. Louis Blues in these playoffs. And following a loss, the Blues are 6-2 behind Binnington in the playoffs, and he's only allowed more than two goals once. So I think he's going to bounce back in front of the home crowd in a big way tonight. I think the St. Louis Blues will even this series up, and I still think it's going six or seven games. So, you know, I'm not completely worried yet. Obviously, if the Blues win tonight, there's nothing more that I can say. They're down 3-1 going back to Boston at that point. That's a disaster. And there's just no way for me to rationalize to you, I got to be honest with you, there's no way I can sell to you that the St. Louis Blues could be Stanley Cup champions if they lose tonight. Tonight is the definition of a must-win game at home because, you know, you do so much to take away home ice advantage in the first two games of the series, and they were able to win game two in overtime and tie the series up at a game apiece going back home. And you thought, okay, here we go. The Blues have a little bit of momentum. They can capitalize on this. They can take care of business at home. And, you know, if everything goes well for them, they can be up 3-1 heading back to Boston, and they don't have to worry about winning in TD Garden again. Well, that didn't go as planned, obviously, getting smashed 7-2 in Game 3. So now all the pressure in the world shifts to St. Louis. And we'll see how they come out because, you know, I guess that can really always go one of two ways. They could look a little bit tight because of nerves, or they could play a little more freely, as I think we kind of saw in Game 2 from the Blues after they were manhandled in Game 1 for the last 40 minutes of that game. Jordan Binnington, their goalie, was the only reason it was even close. They were just, from a possession standpoint and from a shot standpoint, they were mauled the last 40 minutes of that game, and they bounced back in a big way in Game 2, and I'm expecting something similar again tonight. It's not going to be easy just because of the way Tuukka Rask has played, and I mean, you saw it in Game 2 that the St. Louis Blues, if not for Rask, would have beaten the Boston Bruins by 3 or 4 goals in that game, and yet it went to overtime, and the Bruins were the old cliche. They were one shot away from taking a 2-0 series lead just because of the strong performance of their netminder. So they obviously, the Blues, have a tough task ahead of them getting anything past Tuukka Rask because of how great he's been these playoffs. And I mean, if the season were to end today, he's your Conn Smythe winner. And barring something unforeseen, I think if the Bruins pull out the Stanley Cup final, I think either team, whoever wins the Stanley Cup final, the goalie is winning the Conn Smythe trophy. That's just my opinion. We'll see what happens, but you know, getting more than, I would say, three goals past, getting more than three shots past Tukarask, I'm sorry, would probably be the key for the St. Louis Blues just to win this game, because, you know, we saw it in game two. Final score was 3-2 in overtime. We saw four goals in the first period, and then both goalies kind of settled down a little bit and was able to keep every, they were both able to keep everything in front of them. So, you know, my key, I think, for the St. Louis Blues is also they need to stay out of the penalty box and they need to get going early, because you saw it in game two. They took off quickly. You know, they were the better team right out of the gate, and then they draw a stupid penalty. They take a stupid penalty, I should say. When a forward, I can't remember who it was, but he runs Tukarask. The Boston Bruins get a power play. They are now 6-for-14 in the Stanley Cup final so far. I believe that's the statistic. Yeah, they're 6-for-14 in the Stanley Cup final through three games, which is just unprecedented. Connor, I know you're not a big hockey fan, but let me break this down for you. The statistic that it's kind of an old cliche, if you will, but when it comes to special teams in hockey, they always say you want your two special teams to add up to a little bit over 100%. You got to be a little bit better than 20% on your power play, and you got to kill a little bit over 80% of your penalties. Right now, the Boston Bruins are converting 43% of their power plays here in the Stanley Cup final through three games, and they're up towards 40% as a whole throughout these playoffs. It's been an unbelievable driving force of their success. And I don't know if you're going to stop the Boston Bruins power play at this point. The better response, I would say, would just be to minimize the time you spend in the box. You can't be taking stupid penalties. And if the Blues are able to stay out of this box, I think they give themselves a chance to win in this game. And if they don't, like I said, they'll in all likelihood find themselves down 3-1. And the series will be all but decided at that point, heading back to Boston. But, you know, you look at the St. Louis Blues, even if they win game four, obviously they've rescinded their home ice advantage. It's back in the hands of the Boston Bruins following them winning on the road in game three. And I know that that's tough just because of, you know, what a hostile environment, what a snake pit the TD Garden has been these playoffs. And yet on the road this season, the St. Louis Blues are, I believe, 8-3 compared to 5-6 at home. Yep, so they're 8-3 on the road this year. So I think if the St. Louis Blues are able to take care of business tonight at home in a must-win game, Connor. Man, what's wrong with me? I guess it's a Monday.
You caught the owl mispronunciation there.
No kidding. You should save that one. You could play it as a drop, and then it's like I like to give Al a hard time. He can give me a hard time for this one.
We'll throw that in with Disciplinely and
Ryan Gronkowski.
Yep, that one.
Yeah, Ryan Gronkowski.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
So, yeah, a must-win game. Nice. So anyway, a must-win game for the St. Louis Blues tonight. They're actually below 500 at home in the playoffs, which just goes to show how, I don't want to say home ice doesn't matter in the NHL, but it matters less so just because of the parity. It matters less so in hockey compared to other sports, especially what you've seen in the NBA. But they're 8-3 on the road, so despite how hostile TD Garden's been and what a snake pit it's been these playoffs, I still think if they win tonight, the St. Louis Blues have a great shot at winning this series and bringing home the Stanley Cup for the first time since their inception in 1967. So I want to hear from you on this topic. What are your thoughts on the series? Who do you have winning tonight? Who do you have winning the series as a whole? Who's your Conn Smythe winner? I'd love to talk hockey with you. Give me a call. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. We'd love to hear from you here at Current Sports. But what I want to do right now is we're going to shift gears a little bit. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. But we're going to talk NBA Finals after this first break. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Al will be back in tomorrow. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Al will be back in tomorrow, but for tonight, it's just myself and Connor Mathis behind the board. And I was just thinking, Connor, it's a really good thing that we have as L is away the last few days. It's a really good thing that we have the NHL Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals to lean on, because could you imagine how much tougher it would be if, you know, this were the middle of July and we had to talk about, like, a single football article for 20 minutes, or, like, what we think the Tigers are going to do at the trade deadline?
Oh, you mean like last year?
Did we do that last year?
Yeah, when Ian was Ian had to host, and it was a fun little... Well, at least last year we had, like, the back crutch of, like, me on World Cup and just watching the game the whole time. But other than that, it was a lot of hypothetical talk.
Oh, my goodness. You know, slow news days in the world of sports. You hear, you see a whole lot of them in a row during these summer months, but got a little bit of time left as the Stanley Cup Finals and NBA Finals continue on. But we're going to shift gears here now. Again, if you have any thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals, I'd love to hear from you. 517-355-9527. I got the Blues tonight. Who have you got? Love to hear from you. But as we shift gears here to the NBA Finals, and Connor, I will invite you to the show to play a more active role, because obviously you are the NBA expert here. I won't mince words. I'm not a big NBA guy. Obviously, it's more of Connor's domain. But Golden State Warriors evened up the series at one game apiece. And I guess we'll start out. I watched I watched the end of the first half and then the second half as I got home from my other internship last night. And what I saw was, first of all, I missed the early onslaught to start off the second half from the Golden State Warriors, where they scored the first 18 points, I think it was, of the second half. But how was last night's game different than game one? I mean, I saw Toronto didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but was that really why the Golden State Warriors pulled out game two, or was it Steph Curry and Klay Thompson stepping up more so for the Dubs?
Well, I think one of the biggest storylines from this was the officiating got a lot tighter. The first game kind of, they allowed a little more of a physical game, which played right into the Raptors' game plan. And this game, it was a lot tighter officiating. There were a lot of more tic-tac fouls. They were calling a lot more shooting fouls. And the Raptors never adapted to that, whereas Golden State capitalize on this. They were sending Steph Curry to the paint. They were focusing on their bigs. They were sending people to the paint to get the foul calls. Whereas the Raptors, they did a lot of what, you know, you usually see from the Warriors is sitting there complaining to the ref, why didn't I get a call? The other part that really changed the tide of this game, at least in my opinion, was the Raptors' offense in the second half did exactly what you can't do against the Golden State Warriors. Warriors were going down scoring their threes, and what did the Raptors try to do? Did they run their offense? No, they tried to jack up threes instead of running their patient offense and trading buckets. They still would have been down, but it wouldn't have been a 20-point swing like we saw. Other things I noticed too here, Klay Thompson played a lot better, and Draymond played a lot better, and he was getting a lot of praise in the first half for his play. But the one thing I wanted to note about Draymond's game is Draymond is still trying to do too much. There were a lot of times in that game where he got greedy and tried to force something instead of slowing down, setting up their offense, or setting up a transition bucket that they like, you know, one of those trailing transition threes. He tried to force a pass and it led to turnover. So that's something to watch as this series goes forward, is Draymond needs to not force it. He played, again, by no means did he have a bad game, but he needs to kind of, you know, be aware of the situation, know when to slow it down, know when to push it. But those are my initial takeaways from it.
Sure. Do you think Draymond trying to do too much, is that a byproduct of Kevin Durant being out right now? Do you think that'll go away if Durant finds his way back in this series, do you think that'll kind of subside?
You see, I'm not sure, because Draymond for like the past series and even like after KD went down, even starting before that, he's trying to find ways to get into the game. And against Portland, like we talked about on Friday, he was pushing the ball up the court. He was a big, you know, really forcing the defense to kind of respect him on the drive. And, you know, he's trying to start fast breaks, because, you know, he's the one who's usually cleaning up the rebounds that go along, or he's the one getting a steal, something like that, because, you know, he's a defensive-oriented player. So he's usually the first one with the ball if they get a turnover. Again, my thing is just he just kind of needs to know the situation. There's a couple times where he's throwing passes that aren't good looks. They're you can tell he's trying to force something to try to, like, you know, break the other team, which that will come when, you know, the Warriors always have that third quarter avalanche. Everyone talks about the third quarter Warriors, 31st NBA team, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't need to force the issue. It will happen naturally. I think when Kevin Durant comes back, I think Draymond's going to be in more of a scoring role because of, you know, another big, huge part of this game. I think needs to be watched going into games 3 and 4 is injuries are really, really starting to pile up for Golden State. Last night, Kevon Looney had a chest injury that got him, that knocked him out of the game pretty early on.
A chest injury? What happened?
Hang on a second. I have the actual injury report up here. I believe it was something with his collarbone or something of that, something of that nature. But he took a shot and he was out for the game. And then late in the game, Klay Thompson trying to get a jump shot, a foul on a jumper, did something to his hamstring. He landed awkwardly and he tried playing through and it got worse and worse and worse.
Right, because he was in the locker room.
Yeah,
with Kevin
and finally
Durant
he got to get pulled out. And you know, the Kevon Looney injury is big because it forced Boogie Cousins to play more minutes, which, okay, cool. He is a very talented player, but you could tell last game, you know, he wasn't used to that minutes load because of, you know, how
he's still coming back,
from injuries, right. Even during the regular season, too. And this is realistically his second last night was his second playoff game. So he was pretty winded by the end of it. But I'll say this. I think the Klay Thompson injury right now is bigger for them than the Kevin Durant injury was, because when Kevin Durant got injured, they still had Klay Thompson, they still had Draymond Green, they still had Looney, they still had those guys on the bench, the very thin bench, by the way. But now with Thompson going down, when Kevin Durant does come back, and if Kevin Durant comes back in game four, which is the indications are still showing he's going to be a game four.
Yep.
kind of situation right now, you know, who is the going into game three? It's Steph Curry and Draymond, and to be honest, I'm not comfortable with that. Even if Thompson is good to go, hamstring injuries are tricky. Especially for a guy whose game revolves around shooting the ball. I mean, that's a tricky injury to come back from. Even if it's not like really severe, it slows you down. So with that being said, game three is going to be interesting because, one, the bench is getting thinner. Two, Klay Thompson, he's always kind of like the Warriors' supplemental scorer. He's very, very rarely is he he's the go-to guy. He's the one getting all the points. So I think going forward, the Raptors have a good opportunity in game three. And if Klay Thompson's out for game three, if he's out for game four, I think even with Kevin Durant coming back, I think this is still set up to be a deep series because I think Toronto can capitalize on these Golden State injuries.
Fair enough. I have a quote here from Steve Kerr following the game. Klay said he'll be fine, but Klay can be half dead and he'd say he's fine. So we'll see. He thinks it's a minor injury and he's going to have an MRI today. And it looks like he's probable for Wednesday, but we'll see what comes of it. And shifting gears to the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, Pascal Siakam went for over 30 points in Game 1, just 12 in Game 2. Kawhi Leonard had a double-double, 34 points, 14 boards, as we highlighted in the Quick Hit Headliners. Yet if it weren't for a late run, Toronto would have lost this game by double digits, Connor. So who else needs to step up from the Raptors if they're going to have success on the road at Oracle? And if they're going to have a chance to win the series as a whole?
I don't think it's any one player. I think it's a team as a whole. I mean, like I said, their offense got real impatient in the second half, forcing shots they don't usually shoot that early into the shot clock. They weren't playing their game. The other component, I saw Chris Bosh was weighing in because he was doing a little bit of work for TSN on the matter. He's like, the Raptors, when the shots get tough, they need to go back to the paint. That's where they have the advantage. When they don't have Kevon Looney. Jordan Bell didn't play last night. They have Boogie Cousins. They have Draymond Green. Boogie was in foul trouble last night. Draymond Green is always going to be aggressive. And he's a little bit smaller. So you have a little bit of height advantage. I'm not saying that Draymond's a bad defender by any means, but just height wise,
yeah.
Like, come on.
He's what is he, 6'5"?
Yeah, no. He's like six seven ish. But you have a 7-footer and a borderline 7-footer with Siakam, and you have
Marc Gasol. I mean, and Serge Ibaka is almost 7 feet tall. Like, you have to attack the paint. I don't, like, even if Golden State is hitting their threes, you need to get points. It's not about answering in threes. You just need to keep, you need to keep your distance close, because it's much easier to compete with the Warriors if you're down by four, you're down by five, heck, you're down by six. But when they go on these runs where they're up by 15 to 20 points, I mean, there's not much you can do, but then you get, you're trapped into shooting threes. It's kind of like, you know, another example, it's kind of parallel to football. If the team takes away the running game, you're forced to only pass, which right. is all well and good, but the passing game, you get that shut down.
It's not all well and good. You're one-dimensional at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly.
They can, yep, I understand what you're
and,
saying.
And, you know, the other thing with the Raptors, too, is you have a superstar on your team. You have a top five, top three, for some people, player in the NBA. When the going gets tough, give him the ball. They didn't do that until after the Golden State Warrior Avalanche happened in the third quarter. They started feeding Kawhi, and all of a sudden, the game gets closer and closer and closer. You have to let your superstar take over the game, and that for me is a big part. And then, you know, they had some unlucky shots. There were a lot of good looks that just rimmed out. I mean, but again, game one, there were a lot of bad shots that they had that went in. So, I mean, it kind of evens out. And, you know, the last minute and a half of the game, brutal for them. They you need to get points. And go through Kawhi Leonard. And if you're Kawhi Leonard, go to the paint. We've seen Kawhi Leonard took two or three guys to the paint, and he's finishing getting and ones. I mean, You have to play through your superstar. The one thing I will say for the Raptors, though, is, I mean, with how rough their second half was, with how bad their offense was in the second half, with how many open shots were not going down for them, they only lost this game on relatively late game three by Andre Iguodala.
Yeah.
If you're the Raptors, you have to feel great about that, because if game one was the perfect Raptors game, which I believe it was, I think that was the best that team has played. This was probably, like, on a grading scale, was probably like a C-minus type of game. If you at a C-minus are losing to the Warriors by five on a late game three by Andre Iguodala, you have to be pretty confident going into the next game.
No, that's fair enough. And I guess one more question I'll ask for you before we shift gears to this Calvin Johnson discussion is, do you see the Toronto Raptors taking one of the next two in Oracle?
Oh, I think they steal one. I think they steal one. I think next game is probably their game to steal.
Right, because Clay's injury
because
and Kevin
Clay's
Durant
hurt.
Still won't be back.
Kevin Durant's probably not going to be back. Boogie's still getting acclimated to the new workload. Kevon Looney is out, and it seems minor. On a team with five all-stars starting, Kevon Looney being out, oh, that's not a big of a deal. That bench is so thin. They had Jonas Jurepko playing last night. Like,
hey, don't hate on him.
I'm just saying, Jonas Jurepko is not Kevon Looney. So they're getting thinner. I think some of them are going to be tired. I mean, they had two dog fights in Toronto. Neither of those games were easy by any means. So I think Toronto, if they can steal game three, I think they're in a good position to you know, keep this series going. And even when Kevin Durant comes back, I'm interested to see how it plays out from going from the Warriors. They won last night because they were, you know, Steph kind of alluded to it in his comments, saying, oh, the disrespect of that shot is they're working through other players. They're working through the role players. Quinn Cook, the backup point guard, was electric last night. When he was in the game, he's hitting threes. He's making plays. So if you're in that situation for the Warriors, I mean, you gotta keep going with the lineup you have.
Fair enough. So you still think it'll be a 6 or 7 game series?
Yeah, I think it's 6 or 7 at this point. I mean, if a C-minus Raptors team can only lose by five, I mean, if they don't even need like a perfect game to maybe steal one of these. And plus, you know, we don't know what the Warriors are going to do with it. They're a limping team right now.
Sure.
I don't see them winning both games in Oracle. I see them losing one way or another.
Sure. Interesting enough. I still got the Warriors in five, but obviously Connor's the NBA guy, and he's given you a lot of reasons as to why this series could go longer. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But what I want to do right now is we'll take our final break of the hour, and when we come back, we will close out the show with this Calvin Johnson discussion. It was a Detroit Free Press article. I believe Dave Burkett wrote it. We'll touch on that. We'll give you our thoughts on what it will take for Rod Wood and the Detroit Lions to mend their relationship with superstar wide receiver Calvin Johnson. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. And as we come up on the bottom of the hour, just 12 minutes left here on this Monday afternoon edition of Current Sports, we're going to talk a little bit of football. We're going to talk a little bit of Detroit Lions, but we're not going to talk about anybody who's currently on the roster. We're not going to talk about how, you know, any moves in the offseason that could impact the team's on-the-field performance next season. We're actually going to talk about somebody who could probably come back to the roster right now, having been out of football for 3 years, and still probably be the best player on the roster, Connor, if we're being honest.
It probably. I'm sad we're no TJ Hockenson talk. Oh, I'm just itching to talk about the most elite tight end in the draft.
You know, I'm going to try to be fair to TJ Hockenson. That's going to be my one resolution going into next season, because, you know, all of my complaining about TJ Hockenson is based specifically on the team's needs. And based on his tape, based on his play style, I think TJ Hockenson is going to be a very good player for the Detroit Lions. It's just the Lions didn't need a tight end, and I guess we'll put it this way. If you're drafting eighth overall, you're not drafting eighth overall because of your tight end production.
And also historically, tight ends year one, two, sometimes year three do not pan out. They're not immediately contributors.
No.
They usually take some time to really learn the NFL game before they are the weapons that I think Mr. Quinn was coveting when he picked them.
No, I agree with that absolutely. And that's neither here nor there anyways, because we're talking about Calvin Johnson, former Lions wide receiver, future Hall of Fame wide receiver. He was working at one of his camps that he's kind of been doing ever since he's retired from the Lions for high school students, and he was asked about his relationship with the Lions, and he said, and I quote, "The only way they're going to get me back is if they put that money back in my pocket. Nah, you don't do that. I don't care what they say. They can put it back, then they can have me back. That's the bottom line." And he's referring to following his retirement after the 2015 season. He was forced to repay part of his signing bonus that he received a few years earlier, similar to actually what happened with Barry Sanders when he retired unexpectedly from the Detroit Lions. And you know what? I'll say this, because I don't know if I've had a change of heart so much, but I actually supported the Lions. I didn't really have an issue with the Lions asking for that money back at the time that it took place, just because, you know, Calvin Johnson did leave them unexpectedly. And if I recall correctly, that money would have counted against the cap for that season. So I had no issue with the Lions, with anything the Lions really did following his retirement, forcing him to repay the bonus and not letting him out of his contract. So I didn't have an issue from that end. But Connor, as we head into the 2019-2020 season, I think the only thing that matters for the Detroit Lions in this issue, if you will, is mending their relationship with Calvin Johnson, because he's going to be eligible to make the Hall of Fame in 2021, I believe, so 2 years down the line. So while I supported the Detroit Lions in asking him to pay his money back, I certainly think at this point they're just kind of backed into a corner. There's nothing else you can do other than, you know, kind of comply with Calvin's demands. And, you know, for all the memories Calvin provided for all these years for Detroit sports fans and everything he did for the Detroit Lions, as he almost single-handedly tried to bring a Super Bowl to this city, obviously, we never won a playoff game, the Detroit Lions, that is, with Calvin Johnson on the team. But hey, that's not saying a whole lot, because they've only won one playoff game since the inception of the Super Bowl 52 or 53 years ago. So I guess that's not saying a whole lot, but I just think at this point you have to do whatever Calvin tells you to do. You have to have to repay the seven-figure bonus because, you know, as it stands, the Lions, I guess, don't even really have a lot of big names on this team other than, I mean, Matthew Stafford's still around, but Glover Quinn's out the door. You know, Darius Slay is a big name as well, but Calvin Johnson is somebody that the Detroit Lions need. The Detroit Lions need Calvin Johnson at this point more than Calvin Johnson needs the Detroit Lions. That much is obvious, just because with everything Calvin did here, he will be a celebrity in the city of Detroit for years to come. And yet, you know, the only thing people associate the Detroit Lions with is failure in that town. And reuniting with Calvin Johnson, a superstar, is paramount, I think, for the perception of the team in the city. They absolutely need to mend their relationship with Calvin Johnson because although it's not like baseball and Calvin Johnson won't go into the Hall of Fame as a part of a team the way it works in the MLB, I actually saw that earlier today. It is important, I think, as Calvin Johnson is getting ready to go into the Hall of Fame a few years down the road, that he has this good relationship with the Detroit Lions, that they've repaired their relationship with him. So for me, and we'll get Connor's thoughts on this in a minute. I know he's on the phone right now. But for me, I just think Calvin Johnson absolutely, absolutely, absolutely needs to be in good standing with the Detroit Lions. And in this case, that means, you know, the Detroit Lions paying back part of their bonus. So what are your thoughts? I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. And hey, Rod Wood's been able to form a solid relationship with Barry Sanders since taking over as team president a few years ago. I certainly think he'll be up to paying back part of the signing bonus that the Lions asked for back from Calvin a few years ago. I think this will get done fairly soon, just for the reasons I laid out. I think it has to get done. I think if you're the Detroit Lions, you absolutely need the best wide receiver of my lifetime, at least a top two wide receiver in my lifetime, because as a 20-year-old, I'm not quite old enough to remember Jerry Rice. I never really got to see Jerry Rice play. He was at the end of his career, kind of just when I was starting to watch football. But in my lifetime, there's only one other wide receiver that belongs in the same conversation as Calvin Johnson, and that's Randy Moss. Calvin Johnson is he's the most incredible athlete I've ever seen on a football field. And as I've mentioned, he's one of the two best Lions of all time. You know, Barry Sanders is arguably the greatest running back of all time. Calvin Johnson is absolutely a top five receiver of all time and, you know, arguably a top two, top three, top four guy. So for me, it's absolutely paramount that, you know, the Detroit Lions are able to mend this relationship with them and put another star of theirs in good standing. So, you know, shifting gears to kind of what the Lions will be this season, I don't expect a whole lot. And so I think it would be important to have, you know, Calvin Johnson's number be retired at a game this season. I think that would be a good way to keep fans engaged, especially if things go south from the early onset. Because, you know, I went through the Lions schedule earlier this week, and I mean, I do it every season, every year before the season takes place, I should say. And I have the Lions as a 7-9 football team next year. So, you know, I think it would be important, especially if they run into a rough patch early, which they have a couple tough games early, if I recall correctly. If down the stretch they're not really in contention for the playoffs, I think a good way to bring fans to the stadium will be, you know, a Calvin Johnson retirement ceremony. And, you know, you're obviously not going to get that if Calvin Johnson's in poor standing with the team. So we'll see what comes of it. I would expect this to get done in short order. As Rod Wood said, this is a high priority for the team. But I guess we'll see what happens. I'm not really ever surprised by anything disappointing that the Detroit Lions do anymore. So, you know, who's to say? Maybe this drags on a lot longer than it should. But as we come up on the end of the hour here, we'll shift gears to our weekend winners segment. And Connor is still a little busy right now, so we'll get to him in a minute when he gets a chance. But for me personally, I think my biggest weekend winner would just have to be Andy Ruiz Jr., obviously the heavyweight boxer who defeated Anthony Joshua in 7 rounds at Madison Square Garden. I'm not a boxing fan at all. You know, Al will probably have more thoughts as he comes in tomorrow just because I know he is a big boxing guy. He's a big Deontay Wilder fan. And, you know, this upset was completely out of the blue. And Jack Ebling described it on the show yesterday as like a real-life Rocky scenario where a guy came out of nowhere, 5 weeks' notice, an 11-1 underdog. And if I recall correctly, Anthony Joshua didn't even put a clause in his contract where he would get some of his money paid back if he loses the fight. So, obviously, welcome back, Connor. Obviously, this was nothing that Anthony Joshua or anybody in the world of boxing saw coming, but just kind of a funny sports story and one of the biggest upsets in the history of the sport of boxing. So as we come up here on the end of the hour, Connor, briefly, we have 2 minutes. If you have a weekend winner, I'd love to hear it. But first, I just want to hear your thoughts on this Calvin Johnson article.
Look, the Calvin Johnson thing, everyone says he kind of left in the middle of the night. Multiple sources have gone back and said, look, he told Caldwell he was going. He was telling him he was timed. Whether that got communicated to the rest of the organization, I don't think many people know whether or not it did or not. But regardless, it's $1 million. If they were a title, if the Lions were like a playoff pushing, like title contending team, and they needed, and they thought that $1 million would be the difference between them getting the next player to come in and really make them contend, I'd understand being stingy about the money. But $1 million for a team that
he has them backed into a corner. I would say. Just because
he's so beloved. He's probably the second best Detroit Lion of all time.
Yeah.
And you know, he has the public support. The public's going to turn on.
No, the Lions need Calvin Johnson far more than Calvin Johnson
exactly.
needs the Lions.
Oh, exactly. The public's going to turn on the guy who's been there since the 0-16 year and was nothing but loyal to that team. I mean, come on. $1 million for a team that wasn't contending, like that's pocket change. I mean, that just seems like if all it takes is giving him back the million, do it. You need that for your image. Barry Sanders is great, but Barry Sanders is a different generation of fans. This generation of Lions fans remember Calvin Johnson and what he was able to do with not necessarily the best circumstances around him.
Absolutely. And then real quick, about 35 seconds left in the show, weekend winner?
I would say Ruiz for beating Joshua. That was insane.
Well, that's a cop-out because I already picked it.
Well,
but oh well.
I mean, what do you want me to say? I mean, that was the biggest upset in a long time we've seen.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And as we close out this show, I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Al will be back in for tomorrow's Tuesday afternoon edition of Current Sports. Have a great day. Be safe out there and be easy, people.